I'm gonna hit it in a minute, but I was just searching on my computer for some stuff, and because I didn't get a chance to do it earlier. You got a minute, or is this bad time?
No. I got a minute. This is a perfect time for me.
Okay. I thought maybe I had shared this with you, but apparently not. Back in July, I drafted a letter for Bob. This is Pride.
Okay.
So let's deal with Pride stuff for a minute. And here's the way the letter went. Bob refused to sign it. He refused to send it. Against all counsel's advice. Dear Mr. Ziegler, that's the president of Pride.
Okay.
The purpose of this letter is to inform you of NISH's decision to recommend that the U.S. Ability Commission, pursuant to its authority under 41 CFR 5145, temporarily suspend all future project allocations to Pride until Pride certifies to the Commission and NISH that it is not in violation of any Ability One program rules or regulations, the provisions of 41 CFR, the Federal False Claims Act, as amended, applicable U.S. Department of Labor regulations, and the May 31st, 2012 summary report that was forwarded to Pride on June 21st, 2012.
Right.
In keeping with our recommendation, NISH will also need to withhold efforts to salvage the recently annulled Fort Rucker project allocation to Pride,
okay,
and our earlier recommendation that Pride be awarded the Fort Rucker project opportunity.
Okay.
NISH endeavors to ensure that all nonprofit agencies in the program are qualified and suitable for Ability One project allocations in accordance with our CNA responsibilities under the Ability One regulations. Accordingly, when considering an agency's suitability for a project opportunity, NISH assesses the agency's capability and capacity using the set criteria set forth in our B1. And it's a few more words, but, and the agency's suitability within the framework of our controlling regulations. In fact, the regulations specifically require that each nonprofit agency participating in the Ability One program comply with the applicable compensation, employment, and occupational health and safety standards prescribed by the Secretary of Labor, including procedures to encourage standards prescribed by filling of vacancies within a nonprofit by promotion of qualified employees who are blind or have other severe disabilities. Moreover, under 41 CFR 5132, NISH is required to monitor and inspect the activities of its nonprofit agencies to ensure compliance with the JWAD Act and appropriate regulations. While NISH does not normally participate in or exercise any control over the day-to-day personnel and operational activities and decisions of participating CRPs, 41-5110 specifically requires both the Commission and NISH, by extension, to ensure that the program and or its affiliates do not discriminate against program participants with disabilities. In fact, the general prohibitions against discrimination in 41-5110 that are attached for your review simply state includes the following. No qualified handicapped person shall on the basis be excluded from participation and be denied benefits, so-and-so, and it goes on. Finally, because the allegations against Pride at Fort Bliss implicate 5110 of the Code of the Federal Commission and its implementing procedures, we ask that Pride provide the Commission and NISH within 45 days of receipt of this letter with the results of its investigation, including its findings of fact, conclusions of law, and proposed remedies for each violation found, if applicable, so that both the Commission and NISH may properly discharge their obligations to the complainants under 5110. We appreciate your cooperation and understanding this matter and look forward to receiving information from Pride regarding its prompt investigation and remediation of the subject allegations. So, I was trying to get them to put them on probation and suspend all future project allocations and not have Tina go and because with Fort Rucker, that was a big one, and that's where Mickey Gazaway comes in, and that's where Joe Diaz comes in.
Okay.
So prior to this letter, They were in the running for several big TFM opportunities. I kept saying, you guys can't keep giving these guys work with all the stuff they got going on. They got cure notes. They got bad stuff happening on every TFM contract they have. So why do you keep giving them more work?
Right.
And so I said, you know, it's time for you, Bob, to suspend allocations to them and ask the commission to put them on probation. So we got about 15 versions of this letter. I think this was the final one. But the bottom line was finally Bob said to me, and we had him in the corner. I mean, because even he couldn't admit, I mean, he couldn't deny that he needed to do something. So long story short, he finally just said to me, I can't send that letter. And I said, look, you got to put your friendships with Ziggy and Jim Barone and those guys aside. You got to knock them out of this one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't remember. I think David may have applied for Fort Ray. Anyway, whoever applied didn't get it. And what they did was they took it off the procurement list and gave Pride, in conjunction with the commission, gave Pride sufficient time to try to get all these different Fort Bliss and everywhere they are, try to get stuff fixed up. And once they had sufficient time to fix it up, and this was a lot of money, I mean, they were big opportunities. Then Tina went, and that's when she did her little bargaining thing. Bob refused to send this letter, but it was always a bone of contention between Bob and John, because John couldn't understand why, for the life of him, Bob wouldn't send a letter and why they would continue. But then Joe Diaz lied to us, because we sat in a meeting, Mickey, Joe, and I, and whatever, and he was supposed to put them on probation for, they do something where they clean the water or something, so it was some EPA, and they didn't put the right chemicals in, so they got big EPA violations and fines and cure notice and all of that. And it was a big deal, and the general counsel from DOD wrote a very nasty letter around Pride and wrote a letter to their council saying, you know, you people shouldn't be in the program. Anyway, it was a combination of a lot of things at one time. And I said, Mickey, you can't get... So Joe was supposed to put them on our four-step, which you're familiar with, our four-step program.
Right.
You got put on that
right. By
Dave Dubinsky.
Right.
And so Joe was supposed to do that so that they could not bid on, when you're on that, and you're on that's kind of like Nish's probation.
Correct.
When you're on that, you're not supposed to bid for further contracts. Well, Joe told us, yep, we all agreed we were going to do it. We sat in a meeting, we argued it all out for like a half hour or so. So I looked at Joe, and he said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And it turns out that he did, okay, this is how crooked they are. So the four-step program, there's various steps you can be on, right?
Right.
Somehow Joe decided not to put him on, and I don't remember all this, but he put him on like step two instead of like the step where they would be suspended from bidding.
Gotcha.
But that wasn't what we all agreed on.
Of course.
But Bob must have told him, or Martin or somebody told him, don't do that. So he didn't do it, but he told us he did. So we later found out that he didn't, because obviously they bid on something and they got it, and we were like, how'd they get that? You know, they're supposed to be out of the game, temporarily out of the game, until they get fixed. So Bob refused to do it. Ziggy and his people called. Now, you have to also understand this has a long history, and the long history is, you know, Ziggy and his folks caught me up one Friday. You know, I work from home on Fridays, and damn near threatened me because I said to them, you guys are out. You guys can't play anymore right now. You got to go get fixed up at all these places.
Right.
And so, you know, Bob told them they weren't out. I told them they were out. You know, we weren't in sync. The bottom line is that they stayed in. And Tina was in on this, so while they were competing for things, they technically, because of their various violations, not just Fort Bliss, but just about everywhere they are, there were issues.
Right.
They were supposed to be out of the program, but everybody bent the rules 100 times to keep them from being out.
Right.
Now, Elizabeth Martin Williams and Dennis and some others, at another point, and Venable laughs and reminds me of this all the time. Venable, as outside counsel, was trying to keep its money relationship with Nish. And Bob can be kind of a charmer if you don't know him. So those lawyers were telling him, yeah, you can cover this thing on Pride by just throwing it off on the commission. This was another issue, another time. They were already on probation because they lost NASA.
Okay.
Because no CRP has ever screwed up NASA the way they did. And
okay.
So we took that away from them, but they were still getting other TFMs.
Which NASA?
Like, don't these government customers call each other and say,
right,
well, you know, what's going on? But apparently not.
Right.
So long story short, they were arguing to get off of probation, and I kept recommending that they be kept on. Then they were under Department of Justice investigation for the payment, the way they paid people, and, you know, they ended up settling that for $400,000. But I wouldn't let them off of probation. And why were they so busy, you know, pounding and threatening me and everybody else about getting off probation?
Right.
Because they were missing out on competing for opportunities while they were on.
Of course.
Except they, meaning Bob and Martin Williams and them and Joe, figured out a way that, I mean, they couldn't deny, in other words, the ETA violations were there, the government letters about their performance, you know, spoke volumes. They couldn't do anything with that. So they realized at some point, despite all the legal advice and everything else, they were going to have to put them on probation for a little while.
Right.
But, I mean, that came at a... That probably was the beginning of my demise, because I pressed and pressed and pressed, and Elizabeth and Martin and those guys went down there, and they did what we call like a SWAT team audit.
Right.
And when they did the SWAT team audit, you know, they just covered up one thing after the other, and I kept saying, no, 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 no. And then I even got crossways with outside counsel, because outside counsel wanted to... Bob called them in and met with them by himself, and then they were saying, well, you don't have an obligation to report this, you can get away with this, you get away with that. And so, and then my outside counsel was saying, Gene, you better quit pressing on these folks. They're not going to do it, and they're going to take you out instead of, you know, Pride. And I was
right.
Like, yeah, yeah, but that's okay. I'm going to keep pushing for the right thing. So long story short, when they had to put them on probation, when they could have put them on probation recently, they didn't. When everything else happened, when justice gave them the fine and they were under investigation, they went on probation then, okay?
Okay.
But they kept trying to get off. Bob kept promising them they're off. He's like, I can't keep them on probation forever, Gene, because they're out of the game. So what they did is they took, when they knew in the pipeline that some very big TFM opportunities were going to be coming online, and their best buddies were on probation and wouldn't be able to compete for it, somehow the government mysteriously no longer had the requirement, no longer wanted to use Ability One as the solution.
Of course.
So they just kick it out of the program.
Right.
Okay, but they were only taken out of the program because if they left it in the program, other people, Pride would not have been able to compete for it. Other people would have had an opportunity, and it was already promised to Pride.
Right.
So that was a problem, okay? So what they did is, while they were in the penalty box on probation that nobody could avoid at that point, they took it off the procurement list, but they had a plan that once Pride got themselves fixed up and corrected, got the cure notices cured and got off probation, then miraculously Miss Ballard would ride in on a white horse and fight on behalf of the Ability One program for the government to to change their mind about using Ability One and put, you know, put the projects back online for the procurement list.
Of course.
So she wrote in, so, you know, a few months went by and Pride was trying to get cleaned up and, you know, we were deploying all kinds and Elizabeth was in cahoots with their CFO and you know, the whole nine yards. And so at that point, once they thought they had cleaned up everything, paid all their various fines and, you know, taken all everything on the chin, then Tina rides in and miraculously she goes. So I say to Mickey Gazaway, so why is Fort Rucker, why are these things coming off the procurement list? And when you look at the Fort Rucker, and there's another one that I just can't dig up because I just, you know, I'm somewhere I got all the stuff, but I just, time-wise. So what he said to me was, I said, why did you guys even let them compete? Because at the time that they competed for this, they were on probation. And they're not supposed to compete.
Right.
So why did they even get to compete? Well, we had nobody else that could do it, and the customer wanted them. Why the hell would the customer want them if they're screwing up in every TFM project, you know, everywhere they are? Does the customer know that? And are we supporting that? And so, long story short, when I started digging, I found some irregularities around that they shouldn't have even competed. But anyway, they were given the opportunity. But then it didn't matter anymore that it was all unfair and it wasn't right, because it wasn't going to be in the Ability One program anyway. The government had changed their mind and nobody was going to get it. And then I said to Mickey, there's no way we should give this to these people, and you guys didn't compete this fair and square. And then that's when he, under pressure, said something like, I do what my bosses tell me to do. And, you know, even when I said, well, do you think this is going to get by the OIG and all these other people? I mean, because at the time, you know, they had already made their debut.
Right.
And we were under investigation.
Right.
So.
This is Scott and Lisa you're talking about.
Huh?
This is Scott and Lisa you're talking about. It's OIG.
No. This is Scott and Lisa. Yeah, right. They had already come.
Okay.
This stuff is, let's see what the date is. This stuff is July 2012.
I see. And you're talking for Rocker.
And I think Scott and Lisa made a visit in February of 2012.
Right.
And this is the bottom line is in that environment with that kind of heat on us.
Right.
I couldn't believe they were still, you know, doing these little funny shenanigans.
Right.
So I said, Mickey, so why did the government customer decide not to go Ability One? Why is that? Well, they decided not to go Ability One because small businesses, which is true, small businesses are saying that the government's given too much to Ability One, and they decide to go small business. And then that's when Tina rode in on the white horse, went and met with this general, and I'll have to get his name, but went and met with him. And then they were like, well, let's call Carol Odom. Carol Odom was on the commission, and then she just got off the commission because she retired from her job. Now she's on our board. That's her great thing.
Karen.
And I said, I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can call Carol in to save these opportunities because she's conflicted. She's on the commission, you know. So long story short, I didn't know who she was at the time. So she just came on our board.
She
used to be on the commission.
Right.
And now she works for the Army or the Navy, one of those military branches. She was, you know, pretty high ranking.
Okay.
And so the bottom line is, that then, where it all went, was that I don't think she knew. I think, I could be wrong in this, but I think in her heart of hearts, she doesn't know that she crawled in bed with the devils.
Gotcha.
She just thinks that she's doing a really good thing for the Ability One program.
Right.
And she's probably willing to bend a rule or two or push hard on some, you know, old colleagues on behalf of the program. She doesn't know that it's all, you know, screwed up. You know what I mean?
Of
that it's all,
of course,
lying with all this stuff. So she's come on the board, seemed like a fairly sharp lady, but certainly you know, they're carrying their water. So what happens is they manage miraculously to salvage Fort Rucker by saying to whoever this general colonel, I'm going to get it all screwed up, but whoever this major guy is, that, okay, you put Fort Rucker back in the program, and you can have two or three of these others. Well, two or three of the others that Tina handpicked were ones that were online to be given to David, to Portco.
Right.
And some other people that, you know, they don't care about, or they don't like.
Right.
And so she traded away, and then when it came back online, so it was all hush-hush, right?
Right.
Because I had predicted they were going to revive this thing, and they were just buying time and waiting for Pride to, you know, be able to compete again, and then they could, because I put too much noise up. So what happened was, Tina rode in on the white horse, saved the opportunity. Lo and behold, the government customer changed their mind, and now it's back online. And now once it's back online, instead of re-competing, et cetera, they give it to Pride.
Just like that, straight away.
Right. So, but they don't tell me that it ever came back online. So I still, I forgot how, I think David told me that Fort Rucker was back online or whatever. So Fort Rucker... But Joe was all in the middle of it, and he and I kind of really, I said, Joe, somebody's going to jail over this bullshit. You need to get out of, you need to quit playing in the big leagues because you're being used, and it's just not good. I mean, you lied to us and told us that you were going to send those folk a four-step letter which would prevent them from competing, and then you walk out of here instead of sending the letter, and you lied and said you sent the letter. And then instead of doing that, you find some way to put them on step one or step four, some bullshit that lets them compete, when that wasn't what anybody agreed on.
Right.
And so, you know, so anyway, long story short, that was one thing that they did. And they were actually trying to get David in that one because they had actually awarded something to David. The customer had said, we want Portco.
Right.
And they knew it, and so they weren't going to be able to come up with any reason not to give it to Portco. So that's one of the ones that Tina, you know, because she's all involved in this as well. All right, so that's kind of the Pride. That's sort of where Bob has, that's the only clear one where he should have done X but didn't.
Correct.
Okay. So that was one.
This is Fort Rucker. Fort Rucker.
On the conflict of interest, I was looking at, I ran a search, and I was just looking at my presentation. Oh, wait, let me see if I can find that other general counsel letter for Pride. But we already know Pride and Service Source. I mean, the bottom line is, tomorrow, if those guys say, you know, I'd like to take a look at how you guys have awarded and how you're dealing with your top 10 or 20 agencies.
Okay.
That would pretty much uncover a bunch of crap.
Okay.
Very, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You got Peckham, you got Pride, you got Service Source, and then obviously the... But just so you know, which I thought was kind of funny, let me see if I can find that because I had it pulled up. One of these computers, which one was it? You're going to laugh because even I had to laugh. Okay. So this is the, these are the questions that I got fired for back in March. I went after Scott and Lisa came in February.
Right.
And then at the March board meeting, I tried to prepare these people for what the hell was coming.
Right.
And based on the conversation that Scott had with me when he came, and Lisa, when they came and delivered the subpoena, et cetera, I prepared what I call OIG conflict discussion questions.
Okay.
And the first question was, does the current composition of the NISH board create an actual or perceived conflict of interest?
Right.
Was the adoption of the IRS independent director definition sufficient to alleviate concerns from the court of public opinion regarding actual perceived conflicts of interest between producing CRPs, NNA representatives, and NISH? Should producing Ability One representatives, CRP, and NNA representatives be allowed to bid on new Ability One contracts while serving on the NISH Board of Directors? That one got me shot. Should producing Ability One representatives, so CRP representatives, be allowed to receive grants, loans, and other financial assistance while serving on the NISH Board? How many projects have been awarded to producing? This would be an excellent question for Scott tomorrow because he's asking this process stuff. How many projects have been awarded to producing Ability One NISH Board members since 2006? That would be CRP representatives, NCWC representatives, and NNA representatives.
What is NNA?
NNA would be like a not-for-profit agency who has a seat on our board, like Goodwill, Jewish Vocational, what is that? ARC, UPC.
What is
it? All the bad guys are right now. Mm-hmm. UPC, United Cerebral Palsy. There's like 13, or I'm going to forget the number, but there's a number of, if you look at our bylaws, there are a number of agencies that represent larger organizations like Easter Seals that have a seat on our board.
I see.
And so anytime you give something to, like, let's use Goodwill. Anytime you give stuff to a Goodwill, because you've got, that's what they have a seat. How many projects did NISH board members compete for since 2006? And have NISH board members always received projects for which they have placed a bid?
Okay.
Now, these are questions. This is back in my naive days. This is back when Scott has raised the issue with me that, Jane, you know, I'm not sure, because it all came up over giving the opportunity to Ed.
Of course.
I'm not sure your board members and board officers should be able to compete while serving on the board, and is that a conflict of interest?
Right.
So what I was trying to do was give them questions that dealt with Scott's issue that they could kind of look at and see if there's a problem.
Right.
So these were the questions. How many projects did NISH board members compete for since 2006, and have NISH board members always received projects for which they have placed a bid? I have never, nor has outside counsel, been successful in getting an answer to that question. I mean, Dennis, that's the first time I learned that Dennis can really, really box with the rest of them and just filibuster when he wants. I mean, he's worse than were those guys reading Dr. Seuss. I mean, he took days and days and days, and he deployed a bunch of people, but we never got the answer. Never, ever got the answer. They came up with some stuff, but nothing added up. Every time he'd come up with an answer, I'd say, now, how'd you get to that? And he could never substantiate it, so eventually the messenger was shot, and nobody ever answered the question. Do any CRPs, NNAs, or NCWC board members serve on the audit, executive compensation, or bylaws and nominating committee? If so, how many, and how are conflicts managed? Because if you've got those key committees stacked with CRP execs who are also competing in the program and competing for contracts, I mean, you know, it's a conflict.
Right.
Should producing Ability One representatives be allowed to serve as officers on the NISH board? Because in NIB, our sister agency, while they have CRP representatives on the board, they will not allow them to become officers.
Of course.
Describe the NCWC's executive committee's relationship with the NISH board. Denise Driver was telling me just about every, it's not perfect, but it's about 99%, just about every NCWC executive committee member always makes it on to the NISH board. And Paul Ackes is a great example of that. He's getting ready to be the chair.
Of course.
Why has NISH, pursuant to Article 8 of the NCWC bylaws, agreed to pay expenses for NCWC executive committee members? So why do they do that? Because NCWC has a seat on our board. So what these guys do is we loan them staff. They're supposed to be representing CRP's and CRP's interest. They're supposed to be the conscience of Source America. And yet we pay for them to fly there. We pay for them to meet before our board meeting. We give them staff. We resource them with staff. We pay their full expenses. They play golf. And then they stay over. And I have been fussing, I mean, here we are cutting staff and everything else. And these guys all have their own agencies. Their agencies could pick up.
Of course.
The fee. But they don't. NISH does. And they have it in their bylaws. And so I said, well, it's hard to be somebody's conscience if they're paying your bill.
Of course. Of course.
And, you know, it's tough. It's a tough, you know, so... So all these things got me shot. Yeah, these were all just questions. Now, I ran these questions by Dennis and Bob before, and they were fine. They let me hang out there and just get pummeled when I brought them up. Does the formal NCWC NISH board seat provide sufficient input and voice from the CRP community? So why do you need the NCWC executive committee members to stay on for the board meetings? This turns out to be like a week-long thing for them, to stay on when they have a seat in our bylaws. Our bylaws allow one NCWC representative to guarantee them a seat on our board, because what's supposed to happen is they're supposed to go back and tell all you NCWC people what's happening, and they're supposed to fight with that one seat. Instead, we let Jerry Bentonhausen, Wayne McMillan, Paul Atkinson, what's the guy from Petco, Mitch, all those guys that are on that committee, they get to stay over, and they're just like more board members. They're just an extension of the board.
Of course.
And so, and this one really got me. Got me, this is what you call, now that I'm looking back on it, I was really innocent and really dumb. But I'm glad I was, because these are still questions that need to be answered. What role, if any, do NISH board and NCWC members play in ensuring that the B1 process is being administered in a fair and impartial manner? So these were the questions that I call them OIG conflict discussion questions that I try to present to them after Scott and Lisa showed up, and to explain to them what the subpoena was and why they needed to comply and what the issues were as Scott had explained it to me. You know, so these are the questions I came up with. They didn't let me get through the fourth question, I think, before they just did like a two-hour attack, and then they called their lawyers, and it was just, then they went to executive session and voted no confidence, and let's get her out. And then Bob immediately hauled me back to the office, knocked me off the OIG case, said only Venable could handle it, and only Venable could talk to the agents, et cetera, and pretended that he didn't know, that he hadn't seen these questions in the whole nine yards. I will say that Greg Bender at the time said, well, I can't do that, because I had called him as board chair before I presented these things and gone over all this stuff with all of them. They were perfectly fine until, it was a mob mentality. Until they started to lynch me, then it was like I was just hanging. But these are still questions that we don't have good answers to. I also did a PowerPoint. I met with NCWC folk first.
I see.
You'll love that. I met with them, and it was called Office of the Inspector General Investigation and Subpoena.
Okay.
And tried to explain to them that they were covered by it and what the concerns were. And so you'll laugh, because these are my slides. Looking back, this is all, 2020 now. Office of the Inspector General Investigation and Subpoena. Relationship between NISH and the NCWC. The NISH bylaws provide a seat with a voice and vote for NCWC questions. Should Should NCWC executive council members be allowed to receive grants, loans, and other financial assistance from NISH while serving on the executive council and NISH board? Did the NCWC play any role in developing and approving NISH's current 1B process? The answer to that is yes. What role, if any, do NCWC members play in ensuring that the B1 process is administered in a fair and impartial manner? So I gave them their own separate little presentation that got me killed. Do NCWC executive council members receive a go ahead.
No, it's okay. I'm listening.
Oh, I got an echo there. Yeah. A disproportionate number of projects, loans, grants, awards, etc., as compared to non-executive council members. So that would be you. You're a member of the NCSE, but you're not on the executive committee or council of that. So the question is, do they get more projects, loans, grants, and awards as compared to you, who would just be a regular member and not on that executive council?
Right.
How does the NCWC manage actual perceived conflicts of interest related to the Ability One program and its relationship with the NISH organization and board? Do NCWC executive council members have inside advantages, influence, related to opportunities within the Ability One program? Do you want to answer that question? In view of the NCWC's mission, represent the collective interests of Ability One community rehabilitation programs to create a better life for people with significant disabilities, should NCWC become its own trade association or other entity with a formal organizational structure? Why does NISH pay for all NCWC activities, meeting space, travel, and lodging for executive board members, etc., in view of NCWC's former seat on the NISH board? What is the history and thought process behind Article 8 of the NCWC bylaws? The council should not be a dues-paying organization. Administrative support and minor expenses related thereto will be accomplished by NISH. Expenses of the executive board of the council to attend NISH will be paid by NISH. That stuff is in writing.
Right.
So anyway, I did that presentation to them first. They were mean to me, and they did a lot of pushback, and they shot the messenger. But what I didn't know is that was just warming up for my full presentation to the board later that day, where they just took me out. Because I simply delivered those questions and said we ought to get answers, and that's how we should prepare for the OIG investigation.
Right.
In addition to that, I said to them, because Scott and those guys subpoenaed board advisors, board members, NCWC. Scott and Lisa really didn't understand how close the NCWC people were or how they were related. So there was debate and question about whether or not, you know, they were included. And then I went back and explained to Lisa, and so Lisa said, yeah, they should be included. So they then, in terms of the subpoena, they then said, well, we're going to lawyer up. We're not included. We're not NISH board members. But they're on NISH board committees, they vote, they come up with these pilot programs. So I think tomorrow, if he asks, you know, all about the NCWC, its relationship to Source America, how does that work, those kind of questions that I gave you.
Right.
If he says, I'm investigating the fairness and transparency of the allocation process based on the GAO report and based on what he told us when he came in February. What can you tell me about, you know, who has been getting the contracts in terms of your board members, how many of them have been getting contracts? What have they gotten recently? How many pilot projects? What kind of financial assistance, loans, and grants have they been getting? You know, those kinds of, okay, those are very objective kind of things. Either they've been getting them or they haven't.
Right.
Now, how many people have moved from the NCWC Executive Council onto the NISH board? What do the board officers look like? Are they independent? Are there any independent? Are the officers of the NISH board independent, or are they made up of CRP executives who are also participating in the the contract bidding process?
Right.
So the whole conflict of interest issue, and then you get down to, who's on the executive committee of the board, who decides Bob's salary, who's on the audit committee, who's minding the store?
Right.
I mean, the audit committee is a committee that's supposed to be checking to make sure the organization doesn't have any accounting irregularities or any other internal controls and that kind of stuff. So if that's headed by the CRPs that are participating in the program, come on.
Right.
So those should be independent. There are certain committees that should be independent.
Right.
And that would be the Executive Compensation Committee, the Audit Committee, but those things are all stacked by Bob and his buddies now.
Right.
And CRP execs. Now, they've been trying to, I told you had a leak, and I don't know where it is, but and you said you didn't think so, but
no.
I'll tell you another thing they've been doing. They have, and Bill Coleman may be getting his information from somebody that, I don't know, he's not getting it from me, but he did call today, which I thought was interesting. He said, "Hey, Bill, how are you doing? I just want to let you know about Carlos."
Right.
Sorry to hear that, he said. He says, "Well, I think we're going to be fine on this Bob Turner stuff, and the reason I say you got a leak is because they're trying to cover their tracks a little bit. They tried to cover their tracks with the Bob Turner thing. By him resigning and, the whole, they purposely kept that away from counsel, which is interesting. But in addition to that, what else have they done lately to try to cover their tracks? I mean, within the last week, like they knew, the governance committee met. They didn't tell me they were meeting. And so I looked at Denise Dory, who took Denise Driver's place. She's an aftermath. I said, Why didn't you call me? Why didn't you tell me? Why wasn't I invited? She said, "Well, they don't really want your input, and they really didn't want you there." And I said, "Oh, okay." I said, "So what happened?" She said, "Well, I can't really talk about it, but I can tell you that they decided that Brenda Yarnell, who's the next in line, she's a CRP exec,
right?
That she won't get to be the chair-elect. They sort of have a progression."
Right.
I said, but let me see if I understand this right. So Paul Atkinson is their boy. I mean, he's the hitman.
Right.
For everybody. For David Gonzalez, for Portco, for Bonafide, for everybody,
sure.
Right? So he is chair-elect. So Bill Coleman's last meeting is March.
Right.
And then Paul Atkinson would ascend to the chair. Well, Paul Atkinson, just to remind you of who he is, he's the one that is not only chair-elect, but after we put David off the board because of his unmanageable conflict of interest, but after we put him off the board, Paul decided to run in the East Region. He's been around for years and years and years, so the CRP community knows him well and, all that. So Jim Barone changed the bylaws of the organization so that they could put certain people out and that they could maintain this, what I call the machine.
Sure.
Okay. And let me tell you how he did that. So he changed the bylaws, so he was going to change them so we couldn't have any write-in candidates, so people like David could never get elected again. But then he changed them so that the naysayers, we had a couple of naysayers, Barbara Nuremberg and some others, that they would have term limits. And you can't really argue. I mean, it's good to have term limits, but it was really directed, it was done for the wrong purpose. But he also changed it so that a board officer could occupy two seats.
Gotcha.
Rather than keeping things open. So here's how stupid the last election was. In the East Region, when we put David off, they put Paul Atkinson on the ballot, Catherine Malloy, who's okay, from Goodwill, and somebody else. And Catherine said, "Why am I running against Paul Atkinson? He's already on the board. He's going to be the freaking chair. Why am I, you know, what is going on here? So, but Jim Barone, before he left, he did a good thing before he left. He stacked the board for about 10 years. I got to give him credit. He changed the rules and stacked the board in a way that the machine would keep going at least for the next 7 years, I think is a fair thing. So what he did was he changed the bylaws to allow somebody to occupy. So Paul Atkinson, he ran three, he lost, but it didn't matter that he lost because he was a chair-elect anyway. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
And so Catherine won. Now Catherine has to run again because she just fulfilled David's old term.
Right.
I don't know if he's running again. I don't know what the story is on that, but it's just so stupid. So, and that was just so bold and out there. And he's like, we do what we want to do is what Atkinson said. So the bottom line is he's going to be the chair elect, or he's going to be the chair. And as a way to try to clean up their rules and have something to say to Scott, which is why I told you I think you have Lee, within the last few days prior to me announcing to them that Scott has resurfaced, they, behind in that governance meeting, this very last governance meeting, they changed the rules so that after Paul serves as the chair-elect for the next couple years. See, that's about all the time they need, given the plans. After he serves for the next couple years, Brenda Yarnell, who's a CRP exec, they cut her. They said, no, we aren't going to do that again.
Okay.
Too much heat. People complaining that it's conflict. Yeah, it probably is. So my question to Denise Story was, why didn't they just stop it now? Why would they let Paul... After Paul, we're going to clean up our act and do good.
Right.
Okay, so that means Paul would take over in March, and then he'd have two more years.
Right.
And so after Paul, then Brenda would be next, because that's your kind of a sin. She's a treasurer now.
Right.
She would be next, and they said, no, now we're going to change the rules. We're not going to let CRP execs the officers.
Okay.
Now, this is because the machine has run its course, will have run its course. I mean, they know they got to circle this thing back in. So they did that so that they will be able to say, well, we know it's a problem and we're going to fix it in the future. We're just not going to fix it right now.
Correct.
But we're fixing it, or we're working on it. Correct. So they did that. They had Bob Turner resign, and I think under Bill's advice, so they feel like they're pretty clean and sanitized now. But they're not. I mean, they can at least show that they're moving in the right direction.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. And the other thing that, you know, Scott has to align this with is the major opportunities have been... They know what's in the pipeline. They know what's coming. The major opportunities have either been awarded or promised.
Right.
In other words, so what that Bob Turner, these are questions, so what that he got off the board? The question is he still in the game?
Right.
Because he used his board seat to get in the game.
Right.
So the fact that you use it and then jump off, but you still benefit that, it doesn't sanitize it.
Of course not.
But Bill thinks it does. I think we're going to be great on this one. You know, we kicked David Gonzalez off and we kicked Bob Turner off. And so they think that, you know, Bob Turner's free and in the clear. And that whole issue around... Now, the very fact that my question to them would be, well, if Bob Turner is conflicted and you guys accepted his resignation because you believe he was conflicted, then he was resigning to the audit committee chair, who's a CRP exec who's playing in the program. Then if you really believe that you're conflicted if you are doing financial transactions with the company, then why are you allowing the CRPs to continue to bid and serve on the board at the same time?
Right.
Why is it any different?
Exactly.
You know, if you're saying yes, that's a conflict. And so, you know, I think they did a good thing, but I think they kind of cut their nose off to spite their face, because if you look at it the other way, they're agreeing that it is a conflict.
Right.
For somebody to be bidding on contracts and doing business with the corporation, in a conflict that doesn't look good and is unmanageable.
Correct.
By Bob Turner's resignation. I mean, if they really felt like what he was doing wasn't a conflict, then they could have said, you know, no, stay on, don't go anywhere. So, in any event, and what they will argue is, well, we would have let him stay on, but he resigned.
Right.
I mean, that's what I guess they would argue. I don't know. But
is he still,
in any event.
Is he still an advisor?
So you have that. The other thing is that David has, now the other thing goes to, the other thing they want to ask about is the resignation of the former board chair, Greg Bender.
Okay.
Why did he resign?
Right.
Because that idiot put in writing that the reason he resigned is because he was doing the same thing that Pride, the DOJ investigated Pride for, and he couldn't sanitize it. And he wasn't the only one in the program. That was a major black eye that how many agencies were counting temporary labor into their QER, into their numbers.
Right.
And so he resigned and said, you know, bring it in, and tried to clean up his act. But the other thing, the reason they want to ask all about his resignation and why he resigned is because there's email traffic to that.
Right.
But they also want to ask, in addition, you know, we had a whistleblower who said that contracts were being steered to him by select NISH staff.
Right.
The staff would be, and then Greg did try to influence Bob and staff and others by writing that infamous, what we call the sham email.
Sure.
Where he says the B-1, literally in his words, the B-1 process is a sham.
Right.
And it was like 2 days after he became the chair. So if Scott needs examples of how people try to exercise their influence over the board, and then David testifies that that Greg told him, man, come on, when you're on the board, if you want to get some contracts, you just have to, you know, let the NISH staff know. I mean, David can tell you better, but that you're a board member, et cetera, and, you know, they'll play right by you, et cetera, et cetera. So you want to, he definitely wants to ask about Greg, the former board chair member's resignation, the whistleblower complaint related. Now, how would he know all that stuff? He know all that stuff because they assume that he's talked to David.
Sure.
And David was sitting on the board when all this craziness was going on.
Sure. Absolutely.
So he will definitely want to ask about Greg Bender, former board chair, why he resigned, what was the reason, were there any conflicts of interest there? And that will lead to, now I don't know if his agency is under justice investigation, but they should be based on him confessing that he was as guilty as Pride.
Of course.
So they do a lot of DOD stuff, so that may come under that. But the bottom line is that those would be issues where you could find email to support, you know, there's no unringing those bells.
Right.
There's no unringing the bell of what happened at the last board meeting where David was sitting there around like he got it. And that's why if you were at some of these board meetings, you would get some of this stuff immediately. But, you know, David, he's kind of naive on some stuff. Where they voted the $7 million for e-recycling, I told you about that, and then Jim Gibbons said all the right things. Why are you guys voting this without a business plan, so forth and so on? But he was really just trying to, this Lisa was a great counselor. He was really just trying to keep us from entering in, the program from entering into that line of business, because 30, you know, he's got like a number of goodwills, I think, that are in the business already, and that just would have been competition, which is not what he's supposed to do, if, you know, the board member. But, you know, there's that. And then there's, you know, the commission's role in all this. Then there's the stuff around the other stuff that you gotta ask about, and that would be involving the stuff David pointed out, that the commission actually supposedly did an investigation and found nothing. Lakeview.
Right.
All the stuff around Lakeview, hiring the employees, which, you know that story, right? I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mitch decided not only to roll over when it didn't work in his favor, which I thought was interesting, because, you know, why would you then say something? In other words, the employees approached him and said, hey, I can get you these opportunities. They sold themselves to the highest bidder.
Correct.
And Mitch actually bid on the person who was selling her services, so to speak. But I guess she decided to go to a different CRP, so that's when he decided to blow the whistle, which I thought was pretty funny.
Mitch Tomlinson.
You kind of blowing the whistle on yourself.
You're talking about Mitch Tomlinson, right?
Yes, yes, and Peckham.
Right.
And Peckham. So I think if there was a focus around pilot projects and the top 20, it'd be a little wider than that. You could even do probably top 10, but if you did the top 20 CRPs, what has been granted to them,
right,
why, and then, you know, you're on to something with that other organization, that big, huge one on Puerto Rico, too.
Right. Oh, Hugh, absolutely. Have they answered,
you know,
anything?
All of your stuff is shaky. I hate to say this to you, but all of you, the stuff that you've been involved with is sort of shaky.
Of course.
Meaning that there aren't good answers.
Of course not.
Except for the ones where I told you, well, you know, they just decided a different person. But they are obviously bound and determined that you and David are never getting another contract while they're there.
Well, we're bound and determined for them not to be there.
I'm telling you, that's the, you know, and who's the number one? Joe Diaz, Martin, Mickey. There's not one regional director that I can say is sure. I don't know about Rick Van Hughes, but I'd say not to. So there's not one of them.
Right.
And the way the system works is that they are the ones who has the final say, even if the evaluation committee that looks at projects for people, even if they came up with a different answer, the executive director, that one person, has all the power in his or her hands.
To this executive...
Because they can say, to hell with what the evaluation and review committee came up with, I'm not going to give it to Bonafide, I'm going to give it to CRPX.
Right. Do these people...
And that's part of the system I tried to change, and they said, go fly a kite.
Do these people have a warrant or a warrant for awarding contracts, or have they ever had a warrant? Like,
no, they don't. They don't, and they don't have to, because of the way our program is set up.
Sure.
But why bother to have an evaluation and review committee and panel and have them do all that work if at the end of the day you could simply say, that's nice, Ruben, but I'm going to give it to these other people?
Yes, it becomes irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean... So divest them of that power.
Of course.
And that would level the playing field a little bit. Now, somebody came up with, Elmer and a couple other people says, well, what if we just had a blind process? In other words, people submitted their proposals, but you took the name of the CRP off.
Right.
They answered all the questions, and you just simply went on, you know, how they answered the questions. Now, in some ways, that become who could write the best proposal, but in other ways, it would stop some of this bullshit, too.
Correct.
Around, you know, let's backlist this one, this one, this one, and this one. So, I mean, the problem legally is that they can have a subjective system, and there's not much you can do about that. The issue, though, is, you know, who's kind of in bed with conflicts and what they're trying to do. So the overall scheme, as you know, is to steer enough contracts to agencies that you are chummy with, and then when you leave the employ of Source America, you go to work for those agencies.
Sure.
So volunteer for those agencies.
Sure.
But somehow you get rewarded for having taken care of them.
Of course.
While you were there.
Is Jim Barone getting paid by Pride?
Don't know. That's an excellent question. The question there would be, is he now or is he ever in the past?
Correct.
Because he has his own little consulting business. And Martin told me he'd get a fat man's nickel that he is. And Valerie and Carlos asked the question, and I think he said no.
So
they were preparing him for his upcoming, but I don't know that they asked it correctly. I would have said, have you ever, I mean, the mere fact that he came to the board from Pride,
right?
He was recommended to us from Pride. We put him on the board. He ascended to chair. He changed all the governance rules. He changed a lot of policy rules to keep the machine going, left the board, and then went straight to Pride.
Correct.
And then had the unmitigated gall to announce his move to Pride, and like, agents take this.
Right.
You know, that was interesting. Now, he is having lunch with Mr. Chamberlain tomorrow at noon. And Scott's coming tomorrow at noon. I got a town hall from 11 to 12.
Okay.
Bob, I called him about 3 or 4 times today. He did not call me back.
Oh,
which is perfect.
Which reminds me. Give me
Bob. Dennis.
Go ahead.
But Dennis said to me, so are the agents going to be here tomorrow or not? I said, I don't know at this juncture. We're trying to, in view of Carlos's thing, they may or they may not. I may go there or they may come. You know, don't know at this point.
Right.
Oh, I need to know. I mean, I need some prep time. I need to... So he was really asking for Bob.
Right. Right.
Let's see, who else called me? Then Bill Coleman called me to try to see what was going on with the agents tomorrow.
Right.
But everybody in an indirect way. Nobody the direct way. And then they had a guy who works for Elizabeth, Sydney, call me. And he said, I understand you have a conflict about another meeting tomorrow. What are you going to be doing? You know, so he's like a low, like a level 6 or something, you know, like an administrative assistant type.
Right.
So I laughed. So that's kind of how it went. And I purposely told my new person, I said, I don't know how it's going to work. We'll get it worked out. Just block the time on my calendar.
Right.
So I've got the way it works for me is I've got a town hall with, of all people, the East Region, with Joe's region.
Right.
And then at 12, Scott and those guys are coming. And then at 9 o'clock or 8:30, I've got senior staff meetings. So Bob is probably reserving his questions for senior staff tomorrow. It'll be interesting to see. Oh, the other thing that they're happening tomorrow is, and I, against advice of counsel, again, I told, they're now interviewing board members.
They are.
This is some. They're interviewing prospective board members.
Oh.
So I said, Bob Chamberlain, you shouldn't participate in that. You shouldn't pick your boss. I mean, you know, under the circumstance, if they're going to be CRP execs or other people, you know, you probably shouldn't play in that because it'll compromise your independence.
Right.
Because people might say you're stacking the board if you're hand picking people.
And
in conjunction with the nominations committee.
The nominations committee.
They ignored my advice. So what's going on tomorrow? What's on Bob and Dennis's calendar tomorrow? Your senior staff at 9 o'clock. Jim Barone lunch in Bob's office at noon. And Scott already told me, I want to walk around you. I want you to give me a tour of the place. So I laughed about that. I said, okay, fine. And then in the afternoon, all afternoon, despite the fact that I said on a meeting or in a call or something, I don't think Bob should be involved in those interviews. I see he's ignoring that friendly advice, which is another reason he won't call me back today because he thought I would probably give it to him again.
Mm-hmm.
So they're interviewing these people. Again, I'm sure these people are people that Pride and Jim Barone and others have recommended.
Right.
To the board.
You mean Dorothy won't be there? Dorothy Parker.
Huh?
You mean Dorothy Parker will not be interviewed?
Don't know. Because I don't know if the people that they're interviewing are not... They can't really control the regional elections.
Okay.
The only way... If Dorothy runs a good campaign and people vote for her, and I think she could do that, and they will, the only thing they could do is say, we're not going to ratify her. Because one of the... See? Yet another change by Jim Barone to keep the machine, keep the incestuous nature of the board going, is he also changed it so that, well, he changed two rules. The way it used to work is, if you expressed an interest, you, Ruben, me, anybody, Joe Q, citizen, as a CRP exec, and you say, hey, I'm in compliance with all the NISH rules, I think I'd like to run, to be on the NISH board. Provided that all your fees were paid, you weren't behind, and, you know, you weren't on probation or anything like that, they'd have to put you on the ballot. Okay?
Correct.
Jim Morrell changed that. We don't have to do anything we don't want to do. We don't have to put people on the ballot who express an interest. I said, well, if they meet the minimum criteria, in other words, they paid their dues, they're producing CRPs, and they have an interest, let their region, let the other CRP executives decide whether they can be on our board, because they're going to decide with their vote. Who are you as a select nominating committee to say Ruben Lopez or Dorothy Parker cannot be put on the slate
right
to be considered for election? Who are you? Who right. are you guys?
Right.
I mean, on what basis do you do that? Well, we can do whatever we want. It's our board. Well, that's true. You can. And I agree. You can and you do. But, you know, so I lost that argument. And that was Paul Marchand's big thing. You know, he was like, we do whatever the hell we want to do. I mean, he said those exact words to me. So, because I said, unless somebody is asking to be put on the ballot who would bring, you know, disrepute to the organization, et cetera. For example, Bob Jones, the guy who's sitting in jail, he asked to be put on the ballot, and I told him, don't put him on the ballot.
Right.
I said, you know, I don't know this guy. I never met the guy, by the way. I don't know this guy, but there's a lot of rumors swirling around about, you know, his age. This is before all the shit happened with NCD. I said, he could potentially bring disrepute, so I think we shouldn't put him on. But then, after all the stuff happened with NCD, they got Tom Almond, then they wanted to put Tom Almond on, and I said, no, don't put Tom Almond on.
Right.
Oh, here was another thing that you'll love on the Pride list of things. Because they investigate all the connections between Bob Chamberlain and Pride, and Bob Chamberlain and Mike Ziegler, they will hit some pay dirt. But the other thing was, and Elizabeth Goodman and their CFO, something, Yukimachi, I forget his name, it's an Asian name. But that was the other thing, is that I didn't, again, innocence. I, you know, before I figured all this stuff out, I didn't know. I just tried to do my job.
Right.
One of the Pride CFO applied for our board.
Okay.
And I said, I don't think we should put them on. They're problem children. And so I said, they're currently, at the time that he wanted to come on, or that he made application or whatever, Jim Barone was our board chair, and they were under DOJ investigation. And I said, look, I don't need all these people who are under DOJ investigation coming on the board. And
right.
just, you know, I got enough gray hairs.
Right.
And so Jim called me personally. He hates my guts. He called me personally and said, I understand you don't want the Pride guy, CFO, Kim Yamamuchi. I'm going to forget his name, but whoever the CFO, he's still there. You don't want him to be on the board. I said, absolutely not. I mean, they're currently, you know, Pride is currently under DOJ investigation, and the last thing I think we need is him coming while that investigation is ongoing, coming over to our board. You know, the government already thinks we're complicit and in bed with our larger CRPs, and so I think it's a bad idea. But Jim Barone said, well, I will personally call him up and ask him to take his name out of the running.
Okay.
Because I said, look, you know, there's a DOJ investigation. What he was really trying to do was get more information at the time about the investigation, which I didn't get him. I mean, just the fact that there wasn't. But Jim made a phone call to the guy, and he withdrew his name.
Wow. Just
but
like
he did
that.
Try. And, you know, it was just too much heat then, et cetera, et cetera. Then Jim pops up Bob Turner and a couple other people.
Right.
We put on the board. Peter Burns, I forget. And they actually occupy a seat. But the bottom line is, like I said, if he starts investigating relationships and connections between Pride staff and NISH staff, and if he investigates the audit that the SWAT team audit, I call it,
right,
that Elizabeth Martin and those guys did, because we had a lot of argument back and forth about that and them just not wanting to, you know, they just see and don't see,
right.
You know, because
right.
And they're motivated to do that stuff with these big guys because that's where our revenue comes from.
Right. Now, what do you call the SWAT team audit? What do you call that one? What is that?
Well, there was just an audit done of Pride because there were a lot of allegations swirling. And so they wanted to get off probation.
Okay.
And I drew a line in the sand and said, they are not coming off probation while they're under DOJ investigation.
Right.
And, you know, I get all these complaints about Pride all the time, so I don't think so.
Gotcha. So it was Elizabeth.
They said, well, what you can do is you guys go down there and take a look and check out every one of these allegations. And if you check them out and they come out clean, then maybe you can take them off probation.
And
so their counsel would call me like almost every day. We're coming off probation. You guys have no right to keep us on. Blah, 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 blah. You can't just keep us on probation because we're under a justice investigation. I said, it's not just that. There are about 52 other things that you guys are accused of doing wrong that I don't know. So Bob, since he promised Ziggy he was coming off probation, sent Martin Williams, Elizabeth Goodman, maybe Goalie Trump, and a couple other people to go down and see if there's any substance to all these allegations that we were getting from the public, anonymously, not anonymously. They go down, they write up a report, they find even more shit than what we had allegations for. But then they write up a report and Elizabeth tries to sanitize it. We had an internal control auditor who resigned over that whole thing.
Wow.
An African-American guy, I think he since went to the banking industry, because he said, well, you know, Gene, I think they're okay. He was an innocent guy, but then I guess as he got in and they wanted him to change their report and stuff, he was like, uh-uh. Next thing I know, the guy quit.
What's his name?
He was a black guy. He was our internal control auditor.
Okay.
And for a minute there, I'll think of his name, but it's okay. Not coming right this late. But the bottom line is that they wanted him, so then they got Goalie to do it, because that's Bob's girl.
Okay.
Then they got Goalie and Elizabeth to help sanitize the report. And Martin, of course.
Of course.
And Martin. So they were all pushing hard, and I said, you know, why do you guys go against your own self-interest for Pride? What's in it for you?
Right.
And one time I told Joe Diaz, and I know he'll repeat it somewhere, as I said, Pride is a scumbag organization that we keep covering up for, and I don't know why.
Right.
I mean, I understand that Mike Ziegler and Bob Chamberlain are good friends, and Jim Barone and all, but this is ridiculous. This is just too overt. So as God would have it, Fry kept getting in trouble with his government customers. And we have a smoking letter from one of the contracts that they were on from their legal office where they just called quits. They said, look, you guys need to rein these guys in. You're not doing that, blah, 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 blah. Fry's counsel better not ever write me another letter because it's bullshit. It was pretty strong. It was very strong. And then they issued some cure notices following that. Joe tried to stop that train. Martin tried to stop that train. And quite frankly, when I wouldn't play, Bob said, we're going to just get Venable. And I actually fell out a little bit with one of the outside counsel because I said, you're a whore. I said, you'll tell them anything they want to hear, even when you know it's wrong. And he's right. Like, well, you know, and he's like, well, Gene, but you can't just tell them, you're their counsel, you can't tell them to kiss your ass about this stuff. I said, yeah, I can. When it's, they know it's not right, and I'm just not going to go along and tell them what they want to hear. I'm just not going to do that. You know, I'm not a perfect person, and everybody has their crosses to bear, but that's where I draw my line.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
They don't pay me that much money. That's where I draw my line. And so, that was kind of it. And so Bob says, well, they just think that you're coming down. I said, well, I'm just coming down. And then Jim Brown then called for his job when he was board chair was to get me out of there. And he wasn't quite successful because a bunch of stuff happened in the middle of it. And Lisa did say to me, tell the boys I know what they're doing.
Sure.
When they roll in the whole nine yards. So, but it's always, you know, he has systematically gotten rid of anybody who called Bob Chamberlain, Elizabeth Goodman, Martin Williams, and Dennis Fields into accountability. I mean, including board members like Barbara Nuremberg,
sure.
Who used to chair the audit committee, and anybody who'd ask a question. You know, I have to say that Greg, even though he's, as one of my former board members said, a thug, he did at least have a personal conscience and said, well, you know, I'm not gonna be involved in this stuff.
Right.
And he called it quits and got off. But you know, he was part of the machine. Ed Guthrie has been very quiet. You know, I think this scared him into submission. But under his rule, when all the hanky-panky stuff was going on in accounting and finance and all that, he was afraid. Nelphine Evans, who is a friend, and her dad has a CRP in Alaska, I think, or something. I don't know how clean they are, but nevertheless, Nelphine was on our board. She worked for BP. She was a CFO. And she one time looked at Ed Guthrie and said, you're leaving this audit committee meeting because you don't want to do the hard stuff and you don't want to break this machine. She just said it right to his face. And she eventually resigned from the board as well, because she just said it was just too much craziness and she couldn't risk, you know, her financial position with BP and everything else for an organization that was engaging in all this craziness.
Right.
So there are board members that have come and gone that know their problems. John Murphy is the guy you guys really need to get to.
Right.
In Oregon.
Right.
He resigned as well. And he was elected by his region over and over again. I mean, he was, you know, he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of the things they want to look at. Bob has decided that he is totally insulated and that if all the shit goes down, he'll have Martin and Dennis as his fall guys.
Okay.
He'll be untouchable is what he thinks.
Well, we'll see about that. By the way, can I have Bob's cell number? I used to have Bob's, Dennis Fields, and Martin Williams, but my cloud, I didn't back it up when I switched phones, and I lost those numbers. Is there any way I could have those cell numbers?
Yeah, I think I have them.
Because I want you to know that I am going to be the cherry on top at the appropriate time.
I think he's
989-1581.
989-1581. I'd have to get my phone, which I have upstairs, but it's 703-989-1581 is Bob's.
Okay.
Dennis, I'd have to look up, because I'd have to look that up.
Okay.
But Bob also has a direct line, 571-226-4554.
Okay, 571?
226-4554, which is his phone number, is his direct line in his office.
Gotcha.
But tomorrow should prove to be interesting, but that kind of... If Scott just sticks to sort of process, what are we doing, those basic kinds of things, he'll be okay. But I don't know he's going to ask a lot of questions tomorrow from what he told me. He just kind of wants to show up, make his presence known, get a tour. This associate that Carlos gave me, I don't know if she's an associate or partner, but she's pretty darn green. I've never met her, but she's going to show up around 10:30. She's taking the train down. She doesn't know anything about us. And she sounds pretty darn timid on the phone. Let's see, what else is going on? Oh, we're getting a lot of heat from employees that are filing discrimination suits, getting lawyering up. You'll love this. Eileen, we just got... I thought you'd like this more than anything else. Eileen, by the way, is Dave's girl. You understand that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think... Yes, yes.
Jimenez. I mean, yes. When I say his girl, I mean, I think literally, but...
I suspected as much, I want you to know. I suspected as much.
Yeah, I mean, I can't prove it, but Dave likes the ladies. But,
right.
You know, I don't know what they see on them, but in any event, let me see. Yes, it's the tower. All right. Oh, wait a minute. Let me see what Mei Ling is saying. Great season. Yeah, she's really wet behind the ears. But let's take a look at... So the plan now is to cut me out of anything that might not be safe.
Correct.
So wait a minute. Where is this? Dennis sent me this. But Eileen is actually bringing suit.
Really?
Against Fish. Yeah, I'm just trying to... And interestingly enough, now when you get a letter from a lawyer... Can't find the glasses, remember what I was saying.
This is interesting. Now, this is interesting. Very interesting.
Intrigue is incredible. I mean, what we really need to do is get us some screenplay rights, because nobody would believe this shit. No, I'm sorry, they'd be like, is this fiction? I mean, nobody would believe it.
Right.
But, so Dennis, my friend Dennis. All right, so when you get a letter from a lawyer, okay, who should that really, really go to?
To counsel.
It shouldn't go to HR.
No.
It should go to the legal department,
of
right?
Of course, of course.
So this says, from Bob Chamberlain to Dennis Fields. Subject forward, Eileen Jimenez Wilson. Okay?